Get it on.
Show here.
Back show.
Best show here.
Back show.
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Yeah, I got to put on my good sweatpants.
I am sure.
Big O show time.
In April, young in the kingdom, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Living Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a lick at that. But the stone ain't going back to DLFTS.org. And I see challenges of Linux and that bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 939 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy COVID January.
Yeah, we have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Hello. I'm going to have to get Kai on so that she can listen to either the opening or the closing.
There you go.
She believes me that you play that every show.
Yeah,
because she's short.
Can she reach the microphone and the headphones?
It's adjustable. I can bring them down to her level if I really need to.
That's good. I want to finish something out from last week and about my dryer. I took it all apart and exposed everything I needed to test. And then I had my daughter come down here and I walked her through everything and had her test it. And lo and behold, we found the device that was bad. And the device was, I believe it was a thermostat.
That sounds
anyway,
about right.
Yeah, so let me just double check. Why am I, my brain farting already here? It was a thermal cutoff kit. I'm sorry. The thermal cutoff
thermal. Yeah.
Yeah. So that blew it. It's like a fuse. And we tested everything else out, and everything seemed to be fine, but we found that. So that day, I looked on Amazon. It was $7, $7.96, and it arrived yesterday, and then I took the back off again and had my daughter put it in. This is the youngest one. Well, she tested it first to make sure that it produced a different result than the one that we took out of there. And she put it back in. We turned on the dryer. Heating elements started working again. No problem. Made sure it was all cleaned out and everything looked good. Slapped it back together. Now it's going to go sit in my garage until this one over here breaks. Because... you know, and it was cool to be able to do that with my youngest daughter. She heard those things. That was a lot of fun. And so there was $7.96. Fixed the dryer. $7.96. And
I got
outstanding.
I got this 30-year-old washer that we've been using for like 15 years now. And it's making a noise that makes me think that the motor is going out on it. Light, high-pitched humming noise when it's spinning, so...
Oh, okay. You sure it might not be the belt?
Yeah,
it could be the belt, I guess, but... finding parts for it would probably be much difficult.
Just plug the model number in and find out if they're available. Although you might have that problem, though, if it is that old.
Oh, it's 30 years old at least.
That.
It depends. It depends on how long they made that particular model. You know, they may even still make it. Who knows? I know I won't buy Samsung appliances anymore because they're generally crap.
The over electronic washers and dryers, you're just asking for trouble.
Well, it just depends on which one. Some of them, like, I think the LGs are usually pretty decent from what I've heard, but...
Why does my washer and dryer need to get on the internet? Sorry if that makes me sound like a Luddite.
No,
but I don't
it doesn't.
I don't need my dryer to be able to play Doom. I mean, seriously.
Right. That's one thing. Okay, like when we moved into the house here, the one thing I thought I was going to miss, I really don't, and that was my microwave that we had at the old house that we put in the during the remodel was, I forget which brand it was, but it had Wi-Fi built into it. And it was kind of nifty, but...
Why does your toaster need Wi-Fi?
It was a microwave. Well,
what are you going to do?
The neatest thing was, if it worked, and that's the thing, is it didn't really work.
What are you going to do if your toaster has Wi-Fi? Are you going to leave the toast in there all night? Or the bread in there all night?
Let me talk about what I was going to talk about.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But one feature that the Wi-Fi edition gave you was you can, with the app on the phone, you can actually scan the barcode for, like, if you're microwaving a frozen meal or something. You can scan the barcode, it would automatically program the microwave for you. Kind of dumb, really, when you really think about it, but especially since their barcode database wasn't really complete. So if you bought something new, you ended up doing it manually anyway. That's one feature. The other feature that it had was that basically I could have it so my phone would ding too when the microwave was done, which was kind of nice. When I was in my office, I'd know when the food was done. But I don't miss either of those features, and I actually don't mind the microwave we have. It's not as smart as the other one that we had, but I don't really care. It's not a big deal. Technically, there were some features in my dryer, but it didn't have Wi-Fi direct, but basically they had an app that you can scan what code it was on the display, and then it would tell you what was wrong, you know, like on your washer, if you saw something that looked like a U and a B, if you've never seen it before, you may not know that means your washer is unbalanced. But once you figured it out the first time, well, you kind of know what it is. But generally, I generally agree with you, Joe. But I do know that the modern ones, and that's actually something I have a friend of mine, a ham radio friend from years ago. I knew him. I've known him since he was 15. But he's one thing that's an issue with him is he's blind.
Oh, is that the guy that was doing the audiobook podcast a couple of years ago, talking about listening to books at like 14, 16x?
You mean Jonathan Nadeau? No, I think we're talking about somebody different.
No, different guy. This is the guy. I haven't known Jonathan that long. This guy is a guy that when I used to go to the radio club meetings when he lived in the area, his dad would bring him. He is blind, and now he's living on his own because his dad passed. And I think his mom's still around, but he wants to be an independent person. And he lives in an apartment, and I guess the apartment does supply the washer and dryer in the apartment he's in. Well, his girlfriend came over, and I think she was drying some clothes or something, and she hit the buttons and changed the button settings to something he didn't, that, you know, because basically the whole interface on a dryer was buttons, and he only really mastered where the start button was, all right? Besides, you can't read, you know, he can't see LEDs. So basically and this is really the case for most appliances, I think, unless they have, like, dials like your stove may have on it, is that most of them are going to be inaccessible, especially if they have like any kind of electronic interface. At least most microwaves usually have the one I have up here doesn't, but most microwaves usually have a standard 10 keypad, and the start button's usually, I think, lower left, I think. But anyway, the technology could have been used to actually make it a little bit more blind friendly, but it's not. I know Jonathan will echo my concern on that too, probably. But that's if he actually does his own laundry and his wife doesn't do the laundry for him. So anyway, his girlfriend came back over, and I think she fixed it for him. So, because he put his clothes in and he didn't get dried, he was like, "Oh well, it wasn't actually broken. It's just the settings were wrong."
Yeah, my washer and dryer don't need an LED screen unless, you know, they magically make it so that my dryer can fold all my clothes for me when it's done.
Well, the dryer, no. They do make a machine for that, though, nowadays.
Yeah, but that machine, if I remember right, it's still pretty manual. Like, it actually picks it up and folds it. You got to set it in the machine just right, and then it folds it up.
Yeah, I think you might have to, like, for shirts, you might have to hook two things on top of the shoulders or of the shirt T-shirt or something. But to me, it's probably easier to either just manually
fold it yourself.
Or I will say, and I have been thinking about picking one of these up, but they have these folding boards that you'll see stores use it. Yeah. They're not expensive. I may get one of these days just to see if I can fold my T-shirts a little bit flatter than I normally do.
Set it in there at the right spot, and then flip, 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 and open it back up, and you're done.
And it's perfect and nice and thin, too.
All the same size. So, that's why my wife likes them.
And consistent, yes.
The close folding rig.
Pants I generally don't have that problem with. It's usually my T-shirts because, like you, Dan, especially since I work at home all the time, I just don't wear... I have collared shirts. I don't wear... Well, I'm usually wearing shorts, too. But,
well, sometimes it'll get to be like 120 or something here in Texas.
Yeah.
And I can promise you, if I'm working in the garage, it's probably in my underwear.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I will admit that there were times where I had to be on the camera and I wanted to look nice, and I put a polo on, but I had gym shorts on underneath that.
I've like, done that too.
Yeah.
You know, you're having a meeting with upper. You're having a meeting with upper management, so you put a collared shirt on, and yeah. Don't stand up.
That's right. My manager's manager, which she, well, technically she's my manager too, but it's like we've had calls and she pretty much is kind of like all of us just wearing T-shirts now. Sometimes I'll wear an actual T-shirt with the company logo on it, only because I got a call, like three of them.
Well... Right now, if they want me on camera, I'm going to be wearing a sweater or something.
Because you're cold. Well, it's like well, my direct manager, he usually has a toucan and a hoodie with the hood pulled up. Because he's in, I think he's in a similar situation to you, Joe, but he lives in Michigan.
Yeah, no, no.
So it's a little cold in the garage.
That's when you insulate your garage and properly heat it. Michigan is cold.
Yes, I actually thought about that because the way they designed my house, the one wall of the garage, we can probably mount a mini split. And then, at that point, the only thing I would probably have to do is pump some insulation into the walls after that's installed. And then insulate the garage door, and that room would be pretty nice.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it.
No matter what time of year.
The garage door is the major issue, because even if I get that, you know, insulated, then they're still around the edges of that. But I wouldn't mind getting that properly insulated. I still want it to open and close like a regular garage door. Insulate the walls.
Same.
I want to put a door to the backyard. And then I want to cut out a hole and, like, put an air conditioner in the wall.
There you go.
But
one of
those
mini splits would work for that. Yeah,
that requires quite a bit of money.
Right. Right now, if I had that kind of money, I would probably be looking at the whole house generator first. But
yeah.
So we got solar. Solar might be an option too, but I don't get as much sunlight in the winter as you do. But tech news, it looks like the Humble Trove support from Humble Bundle is ending for Mac and Linux.
So
Dan makes Dan sad.
Okay. So that essentially what they're saying is going forward they're not going to offer bundles that include Linux or Mac games or applications involved and access to those on anything other than Windows, correct?
Yes. Well, they're essentially kind of going the Steam route. And they're going to have like an application that you use, and it's going to be Windows only.
I think it's
the Humble Trove app. It's only going to be on Windows. And I think that may only be like the subscription, like where you get like an application or a game every month, I think.
That's the new thing that they're coming out with, right?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah, like it says join Humble Choice. Humble Choice, I think, is what they call it. And you get January games for free. And the featured charity this is Build On.
So the stuff that I've read about this is that Humble Bundle is dropping their support for Linux and Mac OS and has giving people who are on those operating systems a few weeks to download the games that they have. I think there are other things besides games that they were bundling, not including the books. You know, or whatever. Were there other types of like productivity applications? I don't know. But primarily I knew Humble Bundle for their games, and that was their big selling point from the start, was the games were all available for Linux, Mac, and Windows. And the big stink back in the day was that the people on Linux were paying more on average than both Mac and Windows users for the bundles. And that was they made that big claim with their statistics and everything. But so now they are, what surprises me about this is it seems like the worst time to make that kind of decision to do that. From the perspective that, and I, you know, maybe this won't have any impact, but I mean, that new Steam handheld device is coming out. That's Linux based, is it not?
Yep.
And
yeah, it's Arch based, but look at it from the perspective of most of the people that get the Steam Deck aren't going to do anything other than Steam on it, because you actually have to know something to be able to install other things on it.
Right. But I guess
it's not like I've actually currently digging through at least the bundles. And this is pretty much the Humble Choice section, where you get like you pay $12 a month and you get like 10 games as a subscriber every month, and you can keep them.
You know what? Now that I think about it, am I missing something on here? From what I recall, a lot of the Humble Bundle games, they would give you a Steam key for if it was on Steam instead of downloading. Yeah. So I'm wondering if that impacts the Humble Bundle service, like in that regards too. Well, are they not going to do that anymore?
It might, But once again, big but here, with Proton, they probably feel like they don't need to anymore. You can still provide the Steam key, and it'll work just fine on Linux, Windows. I don't know about Mac.
I need to look into just making a game purchase like right now and see if I can still download the Linux version on Humble Bundle, but I got to find a game I want.
Oh, you know what? I think this has to do with... So this is their subscription service. This isn't the Humble Bundles, though.
Correct.
Unless what they're tying the Humble Bundles into that service and all of it's going to be only available through their new application launcher. Because what I read... Maybe I should just go to Humble Bundles site instead of looking at the different articles. And they should have something... They should have something in, like, in their news.
They're probably
actually, there's one on there.
Like
there's
that.
One on there. You there's a bundle right now that you would probably like, Dan. Not that you are vegan, but try vegan cookbooks.
I would go for that.
It's well, vegan recipes aren't generally, you know, depending what it is, I'd probably eat it. But would I eat that all the time? Hell no. I'd like a good hamburger or a good piece of steak or some pork, you know. I do need to eat more vegetables just in general. But, you know, part of my problem cooking at home is cooking stuff that everybody likes. I'll eat almost anything. But my wife, not so much. I guess in my case that probably makes me the woman, but but because I'll eat things like she'll eat like those microwavable Brussels sprouts, but like if I go buy a bunch of fresh ones, cut them up and drizzle them with some olive oil and garlic and maybe a little bacon grease and roast them in the oven, she won't eat it.
Put some nacho cheese on there.
Nacho cheese.
I don't know if that's serious. No,
it's serious.
Okay.
Eat it then.
I just put regular cheese on it, not nacho cheese. I mean, I like nacho cheese, don't get me wrong, but...
Then you're doing it wrong.
A little bit of Parmesan or some Romano. Velveeta. Or ugh. All right, I don't even like Velveeta. Although, I will say this. If I have to go and buy cheap mac and cheese, Velveeta shells are better than Kraft. No question. But yeah, that's one of the book sets they got now. They got Become a Project Management Expert book set, which, yeah, I'm not interested in that. Sounds too much like work. The best graphic novels from Abrams Comic Art. And then books on applied mathematics. Arduino circuits and electronics. Self-care and resilience. That must be a dummies book. That's a Wiley book. And Dragonlock and Ravenfell. 3D printables. Oh, this is a... Wait a minute. I think this is a... That's right. These are STL files.
You know what? Just to go back to this Humble Bundle thing, Humble is really pushing for their subscription service, Humble Choice.
Yes, they are.
So I'm going to assume, based upon what I read on their site and the FAQ and everything, that it's the Humble Choice... is what's changing, And that is a monthly subscription service of $11.99, and it is a Windows-based downloader. I don't know how it is currently running, but that's what they're switching to. I'm not sure this has anything to do with Humble Bundles. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe... I know, like with the Humble Bundle, you used to be able to log into the site and you were able to download those games directly. If it wasn't a key, provided key, you can download it directly from off of the Humble Bundle site, I believe. And
yeah, they still in the game section. They still like when you look at platforms, it's still they still indicate Linux as a supported platform.
Yeah, so
they actually have some Class A games too, like Valheim.
Yeah,
7 Days to Die,
Hollow Knight.
Yep.
So I don't know, man. I don't. I mean, I don't know. Although it's weird, you can actually just go there and buy the games instead of being in bundles. You could buy Hollow Knight right now for $7.49 right off of their site, or Valheim for $14.99.
Yep. Those all have interesting enough, Valheim has Steam, Linux, and Windows. Some of these others, like Hollow Knight, has Steam, Windows,
Mac and Linux,
and that looks like also via GOG.com.
Is that what DRM free is? That's not GOG, is it?
I don't know, man.
It's just a DRM free title. Anyway,
well, good old games.com, which usually has a lot of good selection. Sometimes they have Linux games there too.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're in Humble Choice. Although that's, you know, this is a good question. Are people, like, I don't know. How many people are using Humble Choice? Joe doesn't use it. Do you, right. Joe?
Nope. I don't.
Nope. I'm not a big fan of subscription services like that.
I don't mind subscription services as long as it's something that I would use. It's like,
something you might use is the whole thing.
Right.
But, like,
right.
Loot Crate, for example. Am I going to like every loot crate that comes out every month? No, I'm going to like maybe 1 in 5, 1 in 10. So why am I going to pay a monthly fee for it?
Right. Yeah, well, that's why I stopped doing a bespoke post, because a lot of, like, I look at stuff and like if it's clothes, it's usually useless to me because they usually don't carry the size that I need. I don't drink, and so a lot of times some of their boxes would have like a whiskey stones and stuff like that that I'd never use. And of the outdoor stuff, I found they generally charged probably more than they were worth. Some of the things were worth. So it depends.
You gotta make a
profit. Depends what it is. Well, and the other thing Bespoke does, and I'm okay with making a profit, but the other thing Bespoke does is they kind of do the same thing that Walmart does, and that it'll be a SKU or something specific to them, but if you go direct to whoever made it for them, you can generally find the same thing. Might not be the same color or style, but yeah. Yeah, a whole lot cheaper. Like, and the one, like one of the knives they saw on Bespoke as one of the boxes in Bespoke Post, it looked like a really nice knife, but then you did some research into it and it came from Pakistan, which generally knives that come from Pakistan don't have as good a quality as, a lot of other knives. Yeah. So, it's just a really cheap knife. It's like, yeah,
I think the closest I come to a paid for monthly service where I get something mailed to me each month is Dollar Shave Club. But I know what I'm getting every time with that one.
And I'm a Harry's guy, so yeah. But thing is how many knives do I need? You know, or how much? I have to look and see when they got listed. Now, the one thing I did get from them was the coffee that came in like a what looked like a. To me, it looked like a solvent can, like you buy like a denatured alcohol or in it or something at the hardware store. You know, the can looked like that, but instead it had coffee beans in it, and it had car themes all over.
Sounds cool. But yeah, if you're only going to get like one thing every now and then that you actually like and the rest of it sucks, then...
Right, I'm not going to pay $50 a month.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, the knife that, like, one of the boxes, it says new and noteworthy, but they've actually had this package before, is a real knife, and it's actually a pretty cheap knife, really. The same thing with the Switchback box they have available this month. It's got a compass, it's got a folding shovel, and it's got like a really cheap fixed blade. Now there is a box that Alan would like this month. It is the box name is Puro, and it's 6 premium cigars.
Link premium. Might like that.
What makes them premium?
They were only question. Swept up off the are. Floor once.
They're from good, yeah, the right. Floor. They're from the Good Cigar Company, whoever that. But and the over easy model is, or thing is, it looks like a fry pan with some pancake mix and different syrups.
Dun dun.
And it's actually a cast iron pan, but you know, just looking at it, it doesn't look like it's a good cast iron pan. The cast iron I like is made by Lodge, and that's made in America, I do believe. The only kind of nice thing about the cast iron skillet is it comes with something I need to get for mine. Because that's the thing, when you're cooking with that cast iron skillet, don't grab the handle without a hot pad.
That's a no shit, but yeah. See how some people wouldn't realize that.
Right. I mean, I haven't burned myself. I mean, I've come close a couple times, but, you know, because most of my other fry pans.
You get used to it.
You do.
Yeah. Right. No, I know. I use gloves or with an oven mitt thing or
yep. I want to get one of them. This box actually has a leather pot holder, which basically is just the thing that goes over the handle. It insulates it. In fact, it's made out of the same leather that Red Wing leather goods are made from, the Red Wing boots. Not that I care about that, but. And the other thing that comes with is a Bloody Mary mix, which is useless to me because I don't drink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The syrup would be fine. But then, like, other things, like, one standby that they've had for a long time is this bag called the Weekender. It's essentially they call it an heirloom level carry-all. It's a canvas bag, okay? That has snaps at the top. You know, I wouldn't call that heirloom.
Purse.
But what'd you say?
Purse.
Still didn't understand you.
It's a purse.
No. It's actually bigger than that. It's big enough. It's big enough to be your overnight. Oh, and a Bluetooth speaker. Whoop the freaking! I've only got like 3 of them.
That's it.
Actually, I'm wrong. I've got technically every Google Home Mini or Nest Mini are Bluetooth speakers too. But then I got the one I use in my shower. It doesn't go in the shower. I just set it up on the rail of the shower door. Now they do have a box of of hot sauces. The name of the box is Scorch. But if I'm buying hot sauces, I want to go to heatness.com and buy some of the stuff they have. But yeah, I go look at the boxes and I'm like, not really.
Dun, dun. I have a complaint to issue.
Oh.
Yeah. I got fucked by Microsoft today.
Oh.
Yeah, this was terrible. Microsoft made me burn my freaking pine nuts that I was roasting for my pesto.
Because why?
I was, obviously set to roasting some pine nuts for pesto, and I was running a little short on time. I wasn't running short on time at that time, but I was like, okay, this is going to take a few minutes. I'm like, you know what I got to do? I gotta be out of work next week, and when we take a day off or whatever, what they like us to do is put it in our calendar so that if they go to schedule meetings, people will know that we're out, and they're not going to do that. You know, they can move the meeting around, and also put on a schedule for your coworkers that they know. Like, put it on their calendar that you're not going to be there. And I haven't done that part yet, but that's what I was about to do. And it was at that point that I said, you know, I am sick and tired of whenever I set up a meeting, putting in everybody's email address that I need to invite to these meetings. I'm like, I used to have a group that had all this in there, and I don't have that anymore. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe it was because they changed groups. So I'm like, I'm going to go create a group to do this. And I couldn't figure it out. This was on Outlook 365 for Mac. I was in the new interface, and I was reading directions on the web because I couldn't find it. Like, it should be the most obvious thing in the world. Like, grab a bunch of email addresses and create a group with them, or create a group somewhere. It says create a group, and you can put down all the email addresses. I could not find it for the life of me. I was following the directions that I saw for doing it, and the new interface, like, it was just, I managed to find what they call is new contact list, right? So it's called a contact list. I managed to see it, but it was grayed out. Or wait. I don't know if I saw it on the new interface. I went back to the old interface, and I saw that it was grayed out, right? So I'm like, okay. So I'm Googling around trying to find how do I re-enable this. And you, like, have to go in under Mac preferences for Outlook, and then you open up the general tab and you check the show or yeah not you uncheck the hide folders or something like that, hide files, which I don't get it, right? I don't even know what the hell that means. And so you do that, and then that option is supposed to be available. So I did that, and then I'm like, okay, let's go back to the new interface at the same time. Stupid mistake. Right, I saw it there in the old interface, and I went over to the new interface, and it was not there. I couldn't figure it out from the new interface. Option is not there at all. I don't know where it is. So I went back to the old interface. I clicked on to create the new contact list. I added a bunch of names in there, and then I saved it. And then I realized I forgot to add somebody on that list, and now I can't find the damn list. Like, I have no idea how to get that list back. That I can edit it. I can't find it anywhere. And that's when I smell my pine nuts burning, baby. And that is just, yeah. That was absolutely ridiculous. I'm like, it should not be that hard to create a group or a contact list or whatever. It's just, oh my goodness. And I've had the same email account now since I've worked at Gannett, and it baffles me how Outlook does whatever it does, because when I open it up and the I go to the contacts or the people, it's called people now. I click on people and I got this list of contacts, but they're like the contacts I was using the first few years I was there. And like all the people that I contact on a regular basis through email or set up appointment, you know, meetings with, none of those names are in that list that's right there. It's like, I don't know. It's like there's two different address books. There's my personal address book, and then there's the company one in the background somewhere. And what a piece of garbage. Right, Joel? At least it's not as bad as ServiceNow, but it's unacceptable.
I have a ServiceNow thing.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
It could have been me, so I'll say that. But I got a ticket like last week, and it was just one of those ones where a client was like asking stuff they really shouldn't be asking at this point, because it's like a question that I would ask, you know, because hey, I'm an admin and I do the work, you know, they were asking specifics about Log4j. I understand, you know, they're going to ask that stuff, but technically that's something that if you're paying us to host, I don't think you should really care about, you know, unless for some reason there wasn't, you know, your server instance got exploited. But anyway, he was asking if we updated Java, and I'm like, no, we didn't update Java. We didn't need to update Java because Log4j doesn't technically ship inside some distributions of Java. So like for example, the one on this client's server, I went in there and I couldn't even find the jar file for it. So it's like, you know, either our automation deleted the jar file, which is very possible, or whatever, you know. But we had to make some updates to the product and stuff, and so I get pinged from the service delivery manager asking if for an update, and I'm like, I thought I already closed this. All right. So I went in and typed that up, and I proposed the solution again today. That's the other thing, too, is we can only propose the solution. That the ticket doesn't get closed until the client accepts the solution. So that means they can reopen it. what I think happened is I might have typed it up, and I might have like pressed the post button, but I didn't click the save button on the case, so I didn't save it. So I think it's what happened, but it's like, you know, like it should be more like Google Docs. Is like Google Docs, I'll open up and just create a new document. I can completely close the browser. I can go back in and start it over from Google Docs, because there's no saving in Google Docs. The minute you start typing, it saves it. But not ServiceNow.
Well, you gotta love ServiceNow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I thought we were supposed to be switching to ServiceNow, but it looks like we're going to be switching to my ITSM.
Oh boy.
What are you switching
to? I've never heard of that one.
My ITSM.
Oh, is that a web-based service?
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, I don't know yet.
By the end of the year, we should be switching, and they really haven't told us about it. But it's obviously related to ITSM somehow. Genios application.
Well, NIH uses it, because I typed in my ITSM and that's the first link I got. Was my ITSM NIH.gov.
I've used ITSM. I don't know what my ITSM is.
When are you switching
away from Papa?
Remedy, ITSM, maybe?
Yeah, I know what ITSM is. Remedy is.
And
we have been using Papa for years now, and the thing is Papa is a little bit difficult to use, so everybody was like building front ends for Papa to try and make it easier to use. And it just got too convoluted from that point. And now, I don't know what they're going to have us do, because I thought we moved away from Remedy, or were moving away from Remedy, and now if my ITSM is based on Remedy ITSM, then I don't know.
Yuck. I hate kind of moving around, you're moving stuff like that around. You know, I get why they're going to do it. It's like one of these days they're going to do that with us. We use Clarity for keeping track how much time we spend on each client. I used it when I was in professional services too, and it makes much more sense over there because every hour I put in there goes onto a bill for the client. But in our case, it's not the case. You pay your contract fee, and then, you know, we come along with it. The only kind of thing that you might have to pay for, like we had a client, we're going to have to upsize our server because the software that's running on it, it's not our software. We're hosting somebody else's software. But they told us, well, you need to have X amount of cores and X amount of RAM. And we were like half that. So that's in that case, the college is going to have to pay for it.
Dun dun dun!
That bugs everything crap out of me when they move stuff around. Must be an interesting thing.
What?
I was messing around with humblebundle.com, and I must have had something in my cart, but then I went right back to, like, I opened a tab which opens up Google, and on the bottom of that it had your shopping carts, and it listed humblebundle.com.
Where was the shopping cart listed?
Is at the bottom of the Google page.
Really? Wait, what? Yep. Google page?
Google.com.
Google the search page?
Yeah.
Weird.
But granted, you got to remember I'm logged into my Google account as well.
Yeah.
So, it's probably why.
No. On other related notes, I actually had a pretty fun project this past couple of days. I had finished up that Couchbase backup stuff, and I was going to start the joy of stack tracing and cloud functions to write up documentation and stuff like that, how to do it. But before I could jump onto that ticket and knock that out, there was a ticket that was put in a while back. So as I said, our CMS editor is running on top of WordPress VIP because they like the Project Gutenberg editor. So we run that on top of WordPress. And what was desired is in our continuous integration, which we are using CircleCI for, they wanted to do like integration testing, which actually, I guess, integration / I call it UI testing, which communicates with the software to run the test as it's kind of simulating an actual user using it. And what that entailed was using a program called Cypress, a node-based application called Cypress, which would use headless Chrome or Electron or whatever in a headless mode and make the actual calls to the service and analyze the response to see whether it passes your tests. So it's a little complicated to get. It's not that complicated, but it's a little like if you've never done it before, it takes a little bit of a learning curve to get into. Whatever application that you're using to conduct those kind of tests, and in this case, we were using Cypress, and which is it's really neat though, because when you do it locally, you can run it in one of two ways. There's the headless mode, which runs, like I said, a headless browser, Electron, Chromium, browser. I think there might even be a Mozilla headless browser out there that you could use. Or if you run, you can run it interactively, which brings up this like little interface of the Cypress tests, and you click a button and it opens up your browser. I think Chromium is what this one was using. It opens up Chromium and shows it actually going to your page and doing, putting in the information and checking out what comes out of there and whether it passes the test or not. So that's pretty cool. But what we needed to do was we needed to get this running inside of CircleCI, which, you know, Jenkins, CircleCI, Travis, they're all roughly that same kind of thing where you're doing continuous integration through their service. And that's the only thing that we really have available to us. So what that entailed was the person who picked that ticket up for me had taken it in one direction. CircleCI has its own kind of implementations of technology that you could use containers, you could use Docker containers, or you can kind of use something that is like, they're called machines and also orbs. CircleCI orbs are like people package orbs together to do different things. And for example, CircleCI, there's a CircleCI orb where instead of you having to go through all the steps of installing CircleCI and doing all this stuff in whatever image that you're using, you could just use the orb and you're supposed to be able to just pass it information to the orb and it will run your CircleCI test. But it doesn't really work for us because we're running this against a browser-based application that needs to be running in somewhere. It needs to be running somewhere where you need to connect to it to. So what ended up happening was this guy had taken it to a point, he tried so many different things, but it wasn't working. It just wasn't working. So what I did was I went in and looked at it, and I'm like, well, trying to understand what he had done and then working backwards through this and realizing, well, you know, when he got it to the point of where it should be running the test, the problem was that the application itself isn't running and there's no database running. So the application can't run because there's no database running. Even though it looks like all that stuff should be there, it just wasn't working together and it wasn't running. So eventually what I had done is I stripped it kind of all the way back, taking his basic ideas and the stuff that he put together for doing like a lot of the installation and figuring out the dependencies and everything. I stepped it back and I used the two images that were available for CircleCI. One was a PHP image, and which is just a version of Ubuntu with PHP and Apache installed, and a version of MySQL database, and those two together would then in Docker containers off of Docker Hub and be able to build out the rest of this thing. And to make a long story short, this worked beautifully. Being able to use the database in there, it's just a local host connection. You could specify the username and password in the configuration file. So ultimately what you end up with is you have two containers running and they're networked together so that in a way that it all comes together that localhost or 127.0.0.1 is actually also the database. So if you need to connect to the database, that's the host that you use, localhost 120, and then the port is there, same standard port. And there's that communication in there. You really didn't have to do a lot of work to set that up. That was brain dead easy. But it took a little digging to figure that out. Once you got in there to see how it was supposed to put together and strip out some of the old stuff that was in there. What really like had me tearing my hair out was he originally was trying to save some time by implementing caching technology in here. So what would happen is theoretically you would go through certain steps in this build process and it would check a hash, and if the hash matched, it wouldn't necessarily have to do these steps if it had already performed them and cached this. And so it wouldn't do any of these steps. And what I was finding as I was going through is like, okay, at this one point, it says it can't find the cache, but yet it's restoring 1.4 gigabytes of cache from something. I don't know. I had never actually worked with the caching side of things. So I was just assuming by the fact that I'm looking through watching the steps and it's building it, it's installing all the dependencies that it needs to run the Cypress and the headless Chrome because it needs a virtual frame buffer device and all sorts of that stuff inside the container. I'm watching it do that. And then it goes through our setup of all our node applications that are involved in this and all that. I'm watching that and I'm saying, okay, even though it looks like it's restoring a cache, it's going through this build process, and I was having one hell of a time with the build process because it kept failing. And I had tried a bunch of different images. I had tried started with the node PHP node image, but it wasn't using the right version of node in there. So then I went and I tried installing node by myself, and then I was having problems with it building, even though I had the right version of node in there and everything looked good, and it just wasn't building right. And so I backed all out of it again, and then I found another image that had the version of node that we were on there that we were using, and I pulled that in, and it would be intermittent. It would build, but then it wouldn't build, and it was build, and then it wouldn't build. And so finally what I had figured out was it was the damn caching, which was really odd because the cache was not working in the way that you would expect it to work in this. It was actually what appeared to be happening was it was caching things from previous builds. It seemed to be caching things that might have altered on the GitHub repo and reverted them, that when it checks out the GitHub repo in there, it might have put some additional things reverted. It was just totally wacky. Once I got rid of the cache, all my problems on that end went away. So then I was left with, I had MySQL working. I had, the PHP, everything installed. I had it building the application, and it was ready to go. All I needed then is like, now when Cypress runs, it's like, okay, it tries to run, but it can't run any of the tests because obviously what is missing is WordPress isn't installed. It's Apache's not running. WordPress isn't configured. VIP isn't configured. All these things are not configured and running as we need them to be. He had taken it to a point where he thought that he was installing that stuff, but he actually wasn't. So what was interesting is I had to go out and download a version of PHP, not of WordPress that we were using, install that, which was very easy. Then I, using said commands, configured what WP config inside of there. Then I had to link our repo into the WP contents directory and then install the VIP plugins through a GitHub cloning process, and then configure Apache to use SSL and then to enable the SSL site and then to start the Apache web server. Once all that was in place and it was connected to the database, and things were looking pretty good up until like later this afternoon. But the one problem that I was having was, what makes this incredibly difficult is that you can't see what's going on very easily. Because it runs it headless. Now, I tried yesterday doing a port forwarding, and which was, I would create an SS. CircleCI is a really cool thing that you could rerun any job with SSH enabled and then SSH into that image that's running that job in CircleCI. It'll rerun that whole job and it'll keep it running so long as you are in an SSH session. If you're not in it, it will wait 10 minutes and then close it out. So it's got that really cool feature. So I did an SSH port forwarding that I port forwarded I chose 8443 back through that SSH session to 443 so I can connect to this Apache web server running. And that would have worked brilliantly. Except for our Okta requirement, in that Okta needs to know where to redirect you back to. So the domain that we run locally is called gannett.test when we're doing this. So when it communicates to Okta, it has to be set up that it responds to the SAML authentication, passing back the browser redirect with the cookie set and everything, and it passes it back to gannett.test. And that was chosen because when we set up varying vagrant, which is what they use locally to run all this, it set it up and provided a host file entry to gannett.test into that virtual machine running on vagrant to do all this. So it was coming back and it would send to my browser, go to gannett.test, which is running locally and resolves locally on my machine. So I couldn't get it. Like, I could get to the login page through that tunneled session, but it would redirect because of Okta back to my local login running locally instead of through that tunnel. And that was a bummer. But Cypress also does something where it takes, as it's going headless, it will take a image of that test that it ran and what it was showing when it failed. So then I pulled all those down and looked, and what we could see in there was that it was connecting to the WordPress login page as opposed to our SAML enabled login page, which then brought around the fact that because we have all this enabled, we still need to get a database set up in there. So what I had to do then is the easiest solution for that was I went into my database that I had set up locally for this, and I looked at that and said, this is working great. I need this, but I can't use it because it has my information in there. So I had to back that up, wipe it out, and restart new with a brand new database and get it to the point where it's set up enough that there's a test account and you can log in and all the plugins and everything are supposed to be ready to go. Then dump that out into a SQL file and put that in there and pulled it in through CircleCI in the repo and using MySQL, imported that into the Gannett database called Gannett on that CircleCI instance to then it's running what we would kind of expect. And so I was in there troubleshooting it still. Everything looked like it was in place. Everything was running fine. WordPress was running fine, but it just wasn't connecting to the SAML login page. It was like the plugin wasn't enabled. So then I discovered that I went in and I installed WP WordPress CLI because everything on our end looked right. So I installed WP CLI. And with that, you can use that to do different WordPress functions. And one of them is you can set up user accounts on there, but another is plugin management. And I did a listing of the plugins, and the SAML plugin was listed there, but it wasn't enabled. Even though it looked like it was enabled when we looked at it in the database under the WP options table, it was saying that it wasn't enabled. So then I had to add that step in there too, is install WP CLI to be able to enable that SAML plugin. And bam, once I did that, had that all put together, I was so excited because I was able to get, of our 25 tests, 7 tests passing. The same 7 tests that would pass locally when I would run this. And the reason that all the other tests failed, and all the other tests failed for me locally, was that if we're not on the VPN when we run these tests, the SAML authentication doesn't work properly because it wants you to provide multi-factor authentication. But they have it set up that if you're on the VPN and you run it with these test users, it doesn't require the two-factor authentication. So locally, if you're on the VPN and run these tests, they should all pass. But I was running them locally, and I wasn't on the VPN, and the same test passed locally that passed in Cyprus. I have gotten it to that point. It was a really fun project being able to pull all this stuff together with different Docker containers and be able to really do some lot of scripting in this. And it was fun, Joel, fun. And I got to give CircleCI. I know I bitch about it a lot, and I'm like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem as, in some regards, as flexible as Jenkins. It was a hell of a lot easier to do this in CircleCI than it was in Jenkins, with having to muck around with pipeline commands and stuff like that and Groovy. I just found this works so easy. Dead simple. I mean, dead simple from the prospect that what I was challenged was figuring out how to do this, which was just like scripting commands and then just putting them into the config file, as opposed to not just figuring out how to do this, but then trying to translate this into some kind of Groovy syntax that I could do the same thing and have to worry about like special characters and all sorts of things. I didn't have to worry about that at all in this, and it worked perfectly. Right, Joel?
Sure.
So one thing that, if you ever run into this problem, one way to get around it is what I had to do was I had to add that entry of gannett.test in the hosts file and assign it to 127.0.0.1 for it to work properly, you know, the resolve properly and get it to what we needed to do. So sudo CircleCI runs in the container as the CircleCI user, which has sudo access. So if you do, what I wanted to do was just echo out that line in the host file, like what I want to put in a host file, and then redirect straight into an appending to the host file. But if you do that through sudo, you still get a permissions denied due to that redirection. And I forget exactly what the proper terminology is for that, but it tells you the reason why. I don't remember, but you can get around that pretty easily by just doing, instead of echo whatever it is and redirect it to append to the file, you could just run sudo bash-c and put all that into a bash-c command, and it works perfectly. You don't have a permissions issue at that point. There's probably other ways to get around it, but that's how I solved it, just to blow through there pretty quickly. Something, you know, more information for people if they ever get caught in that predicament. But Joel, I'm digging Circle CI, man. I am.
We're going from Jenkins to Zap Pipelines, which I assume go through Jenkins too.
Are you having to write Groovy?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's probably not my category. It's one of the other things too is internally we wrote this Slack bot where basically just via Slack we can run Jenkins jobs.
Uh-huh.
So I assume that's through the Zap Pipeline, I think, but. That's kind of one thing we're doing there.
That's cool.
Yep. I didn't write the program that does it. That's written by somebody else. But they basically the goal is, you know, so that you know, like you're starting a change, you can say you can actually one of the things that they've got working, I gotta go to the page and learn some of the things they can do through the Slack bot. Like one of the things that we can do is if the space is available, we can expand a block device on a server, like a D drive or something on a Windows box or just the root file system. I think we can do that from just a Slack command. So something else I've been playing with this week is my Galaxy Note 10 Plus got the upgrade to Android 12.
Oh yeah, you're on Android 12 now, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I've been on Android 12 a little bit.
Yep, I'm liking it. I really, honestly, on Samsung's version, I really can't detect what's different. But I do. One thing I did notice was that DeX now also works on. It also works on Wi-Fi. So, like, in fact, I just fired it up, and I've got my phone's DeX pulled up on my laptop here.
Wait, what's DeX?
DeX is basically a desktop interface for the phone. They sell docks that you can plug them into if you don't have a Windows machine, so you can plug them into like a TV and then have a full desktop interface on top of a...
They used to have this really cool thing called Linux on DeX. Now yes, it's just DeX, where it basically shares your screen and quasi-desktop environment to a TV. Yep. And then there's the Windows DeX thing where you can hook it up to a Windows PC and basically your screen comes up there.
Yep, and it works really good over the wireless. And the thing I like the best about it, especially since it's much improved than the last time I messed with it, but I can literally drag a file from my phone right onto the desktop of my laptop. So if I got a picture on there, even wirelessly can do that. It's much better than they used to. I don't know if you can run the DeX client on Linux. You might be able to. I've not tried it, but pretty nifty. And that's kind of one thing I'm starting to make me think, do I want to go with the S22 Ultra when it comes out or do like my dad just did? My dad sent me a Facebook message the other day. It says, what do you think of the Pixel 6 Pro? I said, I think it's a pretty good phone. You know, there's a lot of people that are saying that the Pixel 6 Pro has, well, and Pixel 6 have a lot of bugs. There was a tweet that went out like in the last week from MKBHD who said he's switching to, I think he's went back to the S21 for his daily driver because, if you don't know Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, that's what he goes by on YouTube. He actually carries both an iPhone as well as an Android phone, which I do too when I have to carry my work phone. But he almost always does that, and it was a big deal when he said he couldn't recommend the Pixel 6S or the Pixel 6. I'm trying to remember whether he was the Pixel 6 or Pixel 6 Pro, but. Most of the bugs, though, it's like on every article I've been reading, there's always somebody in there, actually multiple somebodies and say, I don't have a problem with it. And I think part of the thing is I think I like to call what I like to call flagship disease, where people think that your flagship phone, that the one you're paying $1,200 for, should be perfect, which you might have some points on that depending on what it is, but all phones, and I don't care whether you're spending $1,200 or $300, are going to have software bugs on day one. So they just actually had a recent update that fixed a lot of their bugs too. So that I'm kind of thankful for, at least for my dad. But I mean, I really personally, from my standpoint, I really kind of want the camera on the Pixel 6S Pro, or something similar, if they have it on the Samsung ones. I probably wouldn't necessarily miss my Samsung phone. I could deal with it, you know. But we'll see how my dad, like, this is probably, other than I think he had an iPhone at one point, which he hated, my dad, that is, he's only had Samsung phones in the last few years. And surprisingly enough, that's the one thing he will upgrade quite regularly. But that's because I think he uses it all the time. Kind of the same reason why I upgrade pretty regularly, because out of all the computers and laptops I have in my house, what's the one that I use the most every day? My phone. And I think you're probably the same, Joe.
Oh, yes and no. I mean, I'm always going to be using my phone, which right. is why I have a good phone. But I am yep. also always using a computer.
Yeah.
So that is, well, you know, I don't ever get out of the house.
Yep. Now, I will say this. In the evening, I will rarely use a laptop, so for tonight's an exception, of course. Tomorrow might be, too. I might record my next Living in the Shade tomorrow after work, which is going to be kind of topic appropriate for this week, because Microsoft is buying Activision Blizzard. So I think it's, what, $700 million, I think? Or hold on. Let me look up the article.
I don't think they're going to lock everything to Xbox and Windows, though. A lot of people think that they will.
Well, in some cases, like I have some friends of mine, I guess there was some sort of toxic thing happening with inside the company.
Blizzard, yeah.
Yeah.
Investment.
Yep.
Nations.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know a whole lot about that, you know, but I know Microsoft will definitely be able to do something to help make things better. But Activision was, in many respects, the very first third-party developer for a game console, namely the Atari 2600, and they're still around today. So I'm going to cover mostly the 80s history of it, but I will talk briefly about their points after the 80s. Because some of the best games that were out on the 2600 came from Activision. And Activision was started by the Gang of Four from Atari. But that's probably going to be, other than tonight and Sunday, I'll probably also be touching my laptop, in that we'll have another iTech Gear Weekly. He hasn't put show notes out yet on what we're going to talk about, but I think one of the things I need to start writing up on itechgear.org is my review of the DJI Pocket 2 camera, which I've been using every service so far this year, recording video clips here and there. And the very beginning of next month, I'm going to use both the Pocket 2 as well as the Osmo Pocket to record slow-mos of baptisms from two different angles. That'll be a kind of a complex shoot because I'm probably going to have to bring my phone and either, like, I have my backup Motorola Z Force still. I may bring that, or I might just bring my iPad and control one camera on the iPad and control the other one on my phone. And both on tripods. That actually reminds me, too, one of the things I got to look for this weekend is a second tripod. It doesn't have to be as big as my first one. Because for some reason, I can't find my little one that I had. So, because you know what happens when you move? You lose shit. So. Other than that, was just trying to keep all of the snow and stuff cleaned up. I confirmed that we do get snow removal too. I was out Monday. I was cleaning the snow off of my car to go run some errands since I was off work for Martin Luther King Day. And as I was doing that, the neighbors' driveways were being scraped from the snow and ice scraped off of it from. I am assuming it's whatever company that our HOA pays for to do the snow removal. So, but Luke already had our driveway and walks all shoveled, and I do say ours looked the best at the end of the day. Because the only thing that I gotta kind of talk to him about is I bought two big things of ice melt, like Saturday or Sunday before the storm came in. And he used 1.5 on my driveway, the sidewalk, and our little tiny walk. And I'm going to be like, what are you doing? You don't have to put that much ice melt down. That ice melt should have lasted me all winter, probably. Unless we get some hard snows, which I think we're going to get more snow this week, but I don't think it's going to be large, even as large as this last one. We got like 3 inches. I think you guys got more down in Virginia than I did, Dan.
Yeah, we're supposed to be. The last one we had,
right?
We were supposed to. We got a little bit, but it was gone by the day. We're supposed to get tomorrow, like right. Starting, I saw that. And then all through off and on Friday and into Saturday morning.
Yeah, I saw D.C. area schools were closing already. Got a lot of friends that live in the D.C. area because that's where my company started. But I don't know if we're going to get any more this week, but if so, I know they're not making a big deal about it because I would see everybody on Facebook freaking out about it. All the Karens on my CD's Connect page and next door. See, mostly cloudy with 50% chance of snow was tonight. But there is no winter weather advisory, which means that we're talking less than 3 inches.
It's supposed to be really, really cold. And tomorrow, 20 something. And yes, that's really, really cold. Don't tell me it's not.
Right now, we're 1 degree above freezing. Or we were. Hold on. Now, this is weird. Like, the WeatherBug app, which is one of the only, the very few that I found that I like, didn't really want to go with WeatherBug, but whatever. It says it's 30, but then Google... I don't know. The temp that's in my. And no, that's from WeatherBug. The notification pull down says it's 33, which I don't know, man. But But probably the only thing that that I am not liking on my phone since the upgrade to Android 12 was I wanted to set a timer using the timer app, and it put like a pop up over the on top of the screen over everything. Yeah, it was just a little one, but it's like it's for the timer. It's like I don't need the timer to be on my screen the whole time. That's what the notification bar is for. So you can go in and you can turn it off. Other than that, you know, it's very, very from a Samsung perspective with One UI 4. It's a very slight change from One UI 3. Or actually, I think what the last one was 3.1, if I remember right. But it's also happens to be the last major software upgrade that the Note 10 Plus will get. So it'll get security updates for a little while longer, but it's starting to come to the end of life. So, and one other kind of tidbit before we go, if you are like my son, he's a Weather Channel fan. YouTube TV announced that they are going to be adding the Weather Channel at some point this year. And I very may well consider switching from Fubo TV to YouTube TV because I love YouTube. YouTube TV is just a phenomenal service. And it's the same price. So, there we go. If you still like watching TV...
So he's all excited now?
I doubt it. He doesn't even care. If he just wants to watch it, he doesn't want to... You know, my wife probably will balk more at me changing it, even though it's the same exact price. They're both $64.99, although the YouTube TV's current deal now is like the first 3 months are $54.99. So after you get like a free 7 days... So, I'm not doing anything though until the Weather Channel gets over there because, you know, well, granted, if it wasn't for that, I would have switched. I would have been on YouTube TV from the beginning because I liked it better. But my
better than what?
Fubo. It's just
Fubo. How much does Fubo cost you?
$64.99.
And
it's the same price.
So you have that instead of cable, right?
Yes, I don't have cable.
Do you use it a lot? I mean, is it worth the 64?
It keeps my wife happy. She watches Hallmark Murders and Mysteries on there, which that's also on YouTube TV. And all the Hallmark channels, forget... I don't know how she can watch that garbage, but she does.
Actually, you know what?
It's because she's a woman.
Joe watches those, don't you, Joe?
I watch
Hallmark.
No, not unless my wife, you know, wants to watch them.
When I go to my mother-in-law, sometimes I'll be known to binge watch Hallmark, whatever holiday specials are on the Hallmark channel.
My wife,
Murder She Baked.
No, I talked about this on the show before, and yeah. My wife heard me talking about it, and she wanted me to put in the correction there that, yes, we were watching the Hallmark holiday ones, but it was the only the ones that were hockey-themed.
There you go. I know you were the hockey-themed.
The hockey-themed romance ones.
But, you know, those things remind me of something, like, I've been reading in the local, there's a city Facebook group on Facebook. And like one thing, like one of the posts was, I need to find a 3-bedroom apartment in Grove City that costs less than $800. I said, good freaking luck. When I looked, the best one I saw was $2,200. Now, granted, I probably would have saved some if I would have saved signed a year lease down here, but not that much. You know, and other things like the one thing that they're saying that why is the property tax bill so high? And I'm like, well, real estate prices are going nuts. We haven't had a raise in the tax in Ohio. The way we fund schools, which is technically unconstitutional by the Ohio Constitution, and that was deemed that way by a court 20 years ago, but we still use the same system in that we pay property taxes that go towards funding the schools, which I don't mind doing that, okay? But technically it's illegal, but then the way they do it is like a percentage of how much your home is worth. So the auditor will send out someone to basically from appraise your home from the outside. They don't come inside, but they appraise your home, and they also look at like, well, what are houses going for in your neighborhood and all sorts of things like that. And in this neighborhood, like and even where I'm at right now, which is a new neighborhood, when I signed the papers for this house, and this is a way our builder no longer does it, but when I signed the papers at that time, they were locking the price in. All right, so when we closed, the technically the house was worth $50,000 to $60,000 more than we paid. The builder essentially lost money on our build. They're gonna lose more money too because I've got a list of things I gotta get put in the warranty. Things like the baseboard trim going up the stairs is starting to come away from the wall a little bit. It's still attached, but you know, I can I fix it? Yes, but I got my warranty and they're going to fix it right now. It seems things like little things like that. There's nail pops, which are pretty normal. In fact, I got to probably do an inspection run around the house to see where they all are before I put in the – we get like one call where they'll fix the nail pop and they'll you know, fill it in and then paint it so it looks good. All right. Because that's just from settling from when the home was built. We don't have too many in this one. I think that's probably because we don't have a basement. You know, it's all built on a big slab essentially. But because of the home valuations going up, the property tax bills are way high, and I don't never notice that because my home's not paid for, and I pay into an escrow account. So at some point, you know, we'll end up owing our mortgage company more money because we were under escrow probably at some point, but we'll be paying them, not the county. So, but like it's like my dad, since his house is paid for, he probably gets a tax bill from the county, but where he lives is, it's not a bad area of Knoxville, but it's not the greatest area of Knoxville, okay? So the property values probably aren't going up where my dad lives. but that's not the case where I'm at. So, but, yeah, and these people were complaining about this for the last week. all right, let's go ahead and play us out, and we'll see you guys next week.
Damn it.
If you can manage to do it.
I was trying to play around with Android screen mirroring, and I need to get SCR copy.
Yep. I think I've mentioned that on the show before.
Yeah, and so I can pull it down. Arch has it, but I don't have ADB installed on this Arch machine. And the Fedora box that I have that has ADB on it doesn't have source copy in its repo, so I have to get the flat pack. And there's just a little more work in there. It's taking a little longer than I'd like it to. And I was going to say, oh, cool, but, you know, here we are. All right. So we got to play ourselves out of here today. Anything else for the good of the cause?
Nope, nothing.
No. All right. There we go. Now I'm just going to install ADB on here, too. Ah, damn, we'll see what works faster. Here you go. Your promos.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called Libre Quest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how the fuck does this work?
I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm one. I should be. I should be.
Good night, Jojo.
Yeah, good night, Jojo. Where's Jojo? It's bedtime?
It is. It's 9 o'clock.
Isn't ADB?
Good night, Jojo.
Oh. Android platform tools isn't. Oh, I do have ADB installed here. Damn.
Do anything with your phone?
I thought I didn't have it installed on this machine. Ah, I spelled that wrong. No!
No!
I gotta upgrade some stuff on my system. How the fuck do I connect?
I don't... Just added, another Google account to my browsers this week for iTech Gear. I finally got a email address over there. It'd be joel@itechgear.org. But I noticed one annoying thing that Chrome does now. Gmail kind of does this too, but Chrome essentially won't let me log into Gmail in two different tabs in the book. Both accounts, because it basically ties your email address to a browser profile. So I essentially have to open up one browser for my Gmail, my Gorkin, and one for my itechgear.org account. Basically two different browser windows. I'm sure it's going to do the same thing in Linux too. But it's only slightly annoying, but and does the same thing in the Gmail app on Android as well.
Huh.
And I don't know anybody who had the Google Workspaces free version, but that's going away if you did have it. which I'm sure Chris pays for his.
Oh, fuck you. Oh, this is, I gotta stop messing around with this. I got stuff I need to do.
Yeah.
Like get the shit to get the show out and get to bed.
Yeah, see, I need to. One thing I need to start doing better this year, I have been doing horribly at, and that's I need to get the better earlier than 2 in the morning.
Yeah. All that excitement for no reason. Oh, I got a lot of stuff, baby. Is it different than what you emailed me about?
That's one.
Okay. Well, that's good. We got plenty of stuff then.
At least one. The other is my dad actually got the Pixel 6 Pro. He asked me actually.
Whoa! We didn't start the show yet.
Yep.
Joe's gonna ask all these questions, and then we're not gonna have any answers to anything on the show.
I'm not gonna have any answers either because he bought it, and I don't have access to it because it's in Tennessee. So, but I can talk about.
I'm sorry, I kind of phased Joel out when he's talking.
How dare you?
Right, yeah, Hey, this
just figure
is,
he had
this
another
is
problem
we
with
talk
his house,
about now.
And then I move on.
Dan, I went to Giant Eagle the other night. Not only do they have regular Lebanon bologna, but they have the sweet kind, too.
Oh, yeah?
In the deli. Yep. $11.49 a pound.
I'm drinking this diet ginger ale from Boylan Bottling Company, and it's actually darn good.
Good? I don't put out as regularly. God,
happens
that was
with
a long
age.
Time ago. Happens a lot. Sometimes.
I got...
I love that.
Got 3 laptops being sent to me.
For repair?
Well, sort of-ish.
Here, go.
One of them, I know, just needs a new hard drive. And works perfectly fine otherwise. Like a 17-inch laptop. I'm not sure on the processor on that one. Another one of the ones that's getting sent to me is another 17-inch laptop, but I know that one has an i7 in it. But the only issue with it is that the USB ports are a little bit loose. So, and then the third one, I don't know anything about. Then somebody sent me a pair of headphones that were broken. But that was a solid, 15-minute fix.
Now, are you keeping those, or do you send them back?
I'm keeping them.
Oh, so people aren't sending you these stuff for you to fix them and then send it back to them?
Nope, they're just sending them to me.
Not getting paid to fix.
Oh, I'm getting paid. I'm getting new stuff.
Getting
well,
laptops.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. All right, let's start the show before it gets too late. And Pat's like,
yeah,
F you guys.
Let's get it on, man.
Yeah.